Ethereum's price is collapsing down, and many are wondering what is the takeaway lesson from this. The point is not to short Ethereum or to poo-poo these developers. No, the point is for us to draw what are the mistakes that this made, and how can we build a parallel economy? How can we build apps outside of the existing system to reject big tech and the government in a new way and learn from their mistakes? Hi, I'm Shadow Rebel, and in this episode, we're gonna break down why Ethereum is dying. The first biggest reason is that they lack apps. So this is a smart contract platform. The whole purpose of that is we're doing an app. We're doing some kind of programming thing where it performs a function, and that is what drives adoption. But the Ethereum apps, they never came. So the biggest one was Farcaster. This has been an ultimate failure. It's basically a competitor to Nostr, but the big difference between Farcaster and Nostr is that the Farcaster team has massive amount of say in what happens. They control the channels, which was their unique feature, which are these group forums that basically people post about a particular topic. But the problem is the channels were completely separate from the protocol itself. So it was basically a regular website that you just signed with Ethereum. So it was putting lipstick on a pig and it had no real purpose. Add to that, that to sign up for Farcaster, you had to give an email. What is even the purpose of using Ethereum wallets if we're using email to sign up? The Warpcast client was closed source, so they owned your private key and nothing about it was free. They forced you to have the Google Play Store to get Warpcast. And Farcaster isn't even paying the nodes. So these people are paying out of their own pocket. They're losing money to be a part of this project to host a node. Meanwhile, the end customer has to pay to get a Farcaster account. So they pay like $10 in Ethereum to tie a Farcaster ID to their Ethereum public wallet. I mean, the whole point of a smart contract is you have a contract between two people. But how can you have a contract when the person providing the hosting services, the nodes, aren't being paid? Why are you not paying people the coins that you're printing? You're printing tokens out of nothing. Is it the whole point of that? Is you pay the nodes? You know, I'm so fed up with this that I don't actually even feel like criticizing you. And that's why I'm excited about Shadow Rebel Coin. If you buy Shadow Rebel Coin, you can hear somebody else criticize Farcaster for me. That's right, I'm too lazy to do the work. So you can buy my coin, and I'm not even gonna pay someone else to tell you that you suck. You know, even the dictator Saddam Hussein, he was paying his army. He was paying him. You're saying you're worse than Saddam Hussein? So at the end of the day, Warpcast sucked. Uniswap was completely centralized. They're blocking Tor. It's on Cloudflare. The bulk of these Ethereum apps are just a regular website where they have complete control. And the entire model of Ethereum itself is flawed. So you got this browser extension, which by itself, that's a problem because Google and Mozilla are corrupt, and now they're giving you these apps that are in the browser. But the real issue with the Ethereum structure is that you're signing transactions from this foreign website, and you really don't feel like reading them. They're these long strings of gibberish, and people don't know what they mean. And at the end of the day, you're seeing too many of them. It starts to become an annoyance. And so you don't want to read them. But you're risking your entire identity, your life savings, by using all of these Ethereum apps. So the whole idea of you're signing all these transactions you barely understand makes people go, oh, well, I don't want to use sites that I don't trust. which sounds like centralization. So the big problem is now people are only using, you know, Uniswap and Farcaster clients. They're ignoring these younger, newer developers that don't have huge amounts of money because they don't trust connecting their wallet to this foreign thing. So this whole thing centralizes everything to the hands of a few websites, which is exactly like the regular internet, where the end user doesn't control anything. And that's why I'm super excited about Noster, because you can have the browser extensions signing stuff, but the person isn't as scared to use new websites because they're not risking any funds. And so this encourages the Noster ecosystem to be everywhere, as well as it's completely frictionless if you want to create a new key for a different identity on a particular app. So you get much more freedom. And MetaMask, if they really wanted to use the approach that they're going to use, they should have had a feature to toggle on so that you only had to sign transactions that cost you funds, so that this way you could be signing without having pop-ups for stuff that isn't gonna be transferring money, but is just using Ethereum encryption as identity. That's how they should have done it. And privacy on Ethereum is essentially propaganda, as not only is there the information that's on the blockchain that's available to the general public, but on top of that, MetaMask is total spyware. It's sending to the company your IP address, information about your system. They're selling and using that data. I mean, how ridiculous is it that you have something that's spying and broadcasting your metadata named MetaMask? Come on, you're naming it a mask? You might as well be naming a fishing net a condom. And so when Ethereum went to proof of stake, people were getting all excited, like, all right, these fees are gonna come down. Okay, this is gonna be faster. But in reality, they tried to now push people to layer two solutions. And these layer two solutions completely are a pain in the bunghole and are centralized. You gotta use these annoying bridges. You gotta pay these fees. A lot of the time they have their own coin, which is annoying. They're basically completely defeating the fun of making this whole thing decentralized, that you have to have all this knowledge and be doing all this stuff just to use it. And what is even the purpose of the Ethereum Foundation if it's not to scale the layer one? Any random S-clown can create their own layer two Ethereum, so you don't even need the foundation if that's how they're going to move forward. The bulk of these Ethereum nodes are hosted on Amazon's AWS, so they can easily do all kinds of shenanigans, from privacy to censorship issues, not to mention that because Ethereum is proof of stake, the question becomes, who are these stakers and who are getting all these delegated stakes and such? And so the huge issue is that a lot of these staking pools ended up being the KYC exchanges, which are regulated by the US government. So the government can lean on these KYC exchanges, forcing them to use their staking power to censor transactions. So the purpose of this podcast is not to advise you to run out and short Ethereum. However, I do want to briefly mention that you could consider shorting Ethereum through one of the crosses. So a cross is one cryptocurrency against another that does not involve the dollar or any kind of fiat. So the classic example of this is the Bitcoin to Ethereum ratio. And when you go long Bitcoin against Ethereum, you're basically borrowing Ethereum and buying Bitcoin with it. If you look at this chart though, it's had a huge run up. If you think that's going to continue, you could get involved with that, or there are many other crosses beyond the scope of this podcast. You would see which exchanges have crosses that you'd be interested in. Again, I'm not advising this particular strategy right now, given the price action. I have no opinion. I'm just saying, in general, somebody might be interested in doing this, because if you're isolating it by only betting against Ethereum, against, let's say, Bitcoin or something, then you're now isolating this and staying dollar neutral or market neutral against whether all of cryptocurrency is going to fall against the US dollar. So it's an interesting way to sort of hedge the risk or balance the risk. All right, so that's on the short selling side. What about on the long side? What are the lessons to take away? The first one is you should only be investing in stuff that has a purpose. Why would somebody use that cryptocurrency? And it's the adoption that would move the price. And that's why I was super excited about Bastion's Pcoin, because I saw all this adoption on their social media, but there was barely any buzz about it. Combined with the catalyst of all this crackdown on Telegram and all the Russians that use that platform, we put out articles on Bastion's coin. It basically doubled from the time that we put out those posts. Plus, there was a purpose in the cryptocurrency in that you could use it for advertising on the protocol. The second point is, how can we rethink the way that these apps work to do it in a way that honors the user freedom much more? And that's why I'm excited about Arweave. They're not paying me to make this podcast. I'm talking about it because I'm honestly interested in it. One of the cool things about Arweave is that the gateways can serve the content all around the world. That's totally different than something like Uniswap, where you're just connecting to uniswap.org, which is on Cloudflare, and they're basically the dictator god that controls everything going on this website. Whilst with Arweave, it has all these different gateways, so the end user chooses how they want to approach this stuff. And Arweave does have smart contracts, and the cool thing about their smart contracts is they use what's called the lazy approach, where it's written in any programming language and it's executed on the end user's computer. That's totally different than executing it in the Ethereum virtual machine, which requires way more complexity and you can't do as much. So Arweave already has people doing like full-on games with their AO smart contracts, and you're tapping this development pool for all the different languages. So I'm super excited about that. And why does Uniswap need to be on a website to begin with? Shouldn't it just be in your wallet, like a local piece of software on your device? This way the end user can verify that this is even real smart contracts. And so what is the actual point then of this podcast? Well, I don't think the lesson is, oh, well, a bunch of venture capitalists printed Ethereum and so they made money and therefore Ethereum sucks. Because venture capitalists can create cool projects, whether it's crypto or not. And I also don't think that the lesson is, oh, well, Bitcoin is the best and anything other than Bitcoin is automatically garbage. Because that entire mentality is completely missing out on any of the progress and cool apps and development that could be made with smart contracts. Also, Bitcoin has huge issues with layer twos being centralized and sometimes custodial, just like Ethereum has. Ultimately, the real reason that Ethereum failed is because the developers simply did not understand how we can restructure our society, our legal systems, our social media, our monetary systems, our means of communicating with each other, all these things to create this parallel society among ourselves. But the good news is that now that you understand this, you can properly invest your time and money into things that will work. It's your boy Shadow Rebel. I love you, bro. Stay well.